I call life a recording.
The P, the U, the R, the E, the B, the O, the Y, the S, it's Pure Boys.
Hold up,
it's Pure Boys.
Yeah, I got two throats.
The P, the U, the R, the E, the B, the O, the Y, the S, it's Pure Boys.
Hold up,
it's Pure Boys.
Say what? What's up, Fudge Packers? Welcome to Pure Boys Podcast, the purest podcast around. I'm Adam and Urine.
And I'm Two Throat Steve. I'm very surprised how confidently I said I have two throats. It might be the most confident I've ever sounded in my entire life.
I mean, certainly on this show. That's why I chose that clip for the song. So I was like, this is Steve at his at his pinnacle right now in terms of the show. I mean, obviously there'll be more pinnacles later, but for now, that's your peak, baby.
This is Mount Olympus for now, and we're going to go higher. We're going to get bigger.
Of course.
We're going to get better.
Of course. Well, much like, I mean, everybody, if Chloe's mountain taught us anything last week, it's that everyone's got a mountain to climb, and Steve's mountain is this podcast, I guess, or I don't know. I don't know where that metaphor goes from there.
Did you wake up today thinking we had to do Chloe's mountain again?
Well, I'll tell you this much. I woke up this morning thinking about whom's the beggar Vance was in Chloe's mountain. I'll tell you that much. Before we get to that, though, we need to mention at least that this week we're talking about 2020's The Prayer List, a PureFlix classic. Nah, I don't think they actually had anything to do with it. But before we get into any of that, we need to do the Pure Boys prayer.
God bless our podcast. God bless all podcasts. We love you.
All right, enough dilly-dallying. It's time
to forget that during Chloe's mountain?
I don't think so, but who cares? It's time to find out. Steve, who's the beggar Vance of Chloe's mountain?
Oh my god, this was a tough one. I also woke up this morning and I was like, oh my god, I didn't think about the beggar Vance of Chloe's mountain. Not enough anyways. Like, certainly I dived in and dived out throughout the week, but man, who was the beggar Vance of this film? I'm gonna go with my first choice, and it's Chloe's truck.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, she has this old, like, very vintage Ford truck, and it gets her from place to place. It really informs who she is as a Christian and how she relates to the world. So I am going to say the beggar Vance of Chloe's mountain was the truck.
Very good. That's a great answer. And it's weird because it's very similar to my answer for whomst I think is the beggar Vance of Chloe's mountain. And my answer for whomst I think is the beggar Vance of Chloe's mountain is, of course, a hearse full of weed smoke. That's probably, it's supportive, it gets them to where they're going, it helps Chloe learn lessons about her life, you know, it's just cool. I can't think of anything cooler than a hearse full of weed smoke, and I can't think of any golfer cooler than the spirit of Beggar Vance. So,
definitely,
that's why a hearse full of weed smoke is my whomst the beggar Vance of Chloe's mountain.
Man, you were so excited you didn't even let me ask you whomst your beggar Vance was.
Well, you said your piece and then you started looking around you and I thought you had just forgotten to do that. So I just jumped in.
Oh, you
in.
Saved me.
Well, yeah, you seemed like you were floundering for a second, so I threw you a lifeline.
I definitely was. This segment is very emotional for me, as it is you.
Of course, of course. I know that one day someone is going to ask us whomst the beggar Vance of our show is. And even though I made that exact joke last week, it's hard to find transitions between this segment and everyone's favorite segment of the week.
The Kevin Sorbo Tweet of the Week.
We We're getting right to the segments this week. I got a hot one, I think. It was Kevin Sorbo at his worst again. 12:08 p.m. on January 15th, 2022. The tweet of the week is, "Thank you, media, for introducing me to the Joe Rogan podcast. I didn't really listen before, but I'm a full-time viewer. Period."
Like, starting now?
I guess. I love these. He just says full-time viewer. He doesn't really put in a time frame, which was really needed in that part of the tweet. But I think we can assume that he wasn't a fan, and now he's just the biggest fan in the world because everybody loves Joe Rogan, and everybody who listens to Joe Rogan is fully informed.
Absolutely, and we thank you for your service, listeners of Joe Rogan, and we thank you, Joe Rogan, for just having the strength and the courage to say things that a normal, sane, regular person wouldn't even dare to say in public due to fear of repercussions or what it would do to their reputation and how it would make everyone change the way they thought about them. So thank you for your bravery and your strength, Joe. We appreciate it.
Also known as The Truth.
Also known as AKA The Truth, of course. Is that what he's going by now? Is he introducing himself as Joe Rogan, AKA The Truth?
He should.
It's a cool name.
I think that's a really good name.
It's pretty cool. Change the name of the Joe Rogan Experience to The Truth.
Yeah.
And boom, now you're done. That's all you need.
Well, we don't call this the Adam and Steve Experience, even though maybe we should.
Well, maybe, but we're not high on our own supply the way some other people are who name their podcast after themselves.
I think I am.
Well, that's why we've got the Steve Show coming soon as a spinoff.
Well, I have you to humble me, and I've always had you to humble me. This cushy spine that God has given me really elevates my self-worth. So,
for sure, absolutely. Well, hey Joe. Nope. Hey Kevin. Forgot who we were talking to for a second. Forgot what to say. I thought this was the Joe Rogan tweet of the week. I apologize. But hey, Kevin, thank you so much. Steve, great, great pick. I wish you would have grabbed something from January 6th, but that's okay. I'm sure he tweeted out some stuff that was like, "Don't even worry about what I said last January 6th. Everything's gravy," or something like that.
I think he said everything's gravy. Didn't I do a January 6th one last time? Probably not.
I don't think so. I think you did January 2nd last time.
Oh, I'm failing. But also, I mean, I saw Joe Rogan podcast and my eyes went red, you know?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, you saw The Truth and you went, "Oh, I've been red-pilled." I wanted to be black-pilled, but I've been red-pilled instead.
I mean, I wish he was talking about the Pure Boys podcast because I think the same tweet would apply. But for now, this will do.
I also love that, like, based on that tweet, Kevin listened to one podcast and was like, "I'm a regular viewer." It's like, well, I mean, you've regularly viewed it once, I guess. That's good.
He's probably got a lot of downtime flying from shoot to shoot.
That's a very good point, yeah. I don't even know what he's working on right now. Well, I know what he's working on. Some religious movies, I'm sure. Something like that.
I think he's directing, he's producing, he's starring.
He's
doing all the things.
Okay, we can't let the song finish. Only had 8 seconds left. Had to wrap it up. Sorry. Thanks, Kev. Great as always. Thank you for helping spread the truth.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, well, on that note, I guess we should get to it. Should we get to what we all came here for?
Do you have Chiz Jism Christmas queued up? Because I would really like to listen to that.
Yeah, of course I can play Christmas Chiz. Here it is.
Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas.
Yeah. I'm Chiz Jism. I'm Chiz Jism. I'm Chiz Jism. I'm Chiz Jism.
That's great.
I'm Chiz
Jism. Right. Ho, ho, ho. Merry Christmas.
That's great.
Yahweh. What's up, Fudgebaggers? It's time to talk about 2020's The Prayer List.
That was perfect. Thank you so much for that. I've had Jism in my heart all morning, and I really needed to let it out.
Of course, anytime you need to chiz, you just let me know.
Okay.
All right.
Those times are dead now, and we're talking about The Prayer List. the best movie ever made with two blondes.
Wow. This movie, what a movie.
What a hunk. You got everything in this movie. You got physical perfection in all sorts of mirrors.
Yeah, absolutely. You've got senseis worth looking up to. Got just some of the finest acting by real life realtors I've ever seen ever.
A real downer of a story to listen to on the day of your wedding, that's for sure.
And also, like, what do your friends not know anything about your wife to be? Yeah. Like,
they're in the story. They are a part of the story. They know exactly what you're talking about. The only thing that this relates to is the best man, because he wasn't a part of the story.
Right, but he's the most incredulous about it. Like, he's mocking it the entire time, and it's like, bro, the six other people in this room are components of the story. Don't look at them and go, this story is just nonsense. It's just fantastical. And I paid for her friggin' first semester of college. What are you talking about?
What do you think the best man does for a living? I'm going to guess inside trader.
I'm going to guess that he moonlights as a skinny Scott Aukerman impersonator.
Oh, yeah? The Scott Aukerman?
Yeah, but not like, he's not Scott Aukerman. He's on Hollywood Boulevard pretending, being like, hey, do you want to take a picture with Scott Aukerman? And they're like, I don't. Are you Scott Aukerman? Is that what you're asking? I don't know.
So he's in front of the Manchu Chinese Theater in L.A. Yeah,
he's in front of Manchuwalk Chinese
the
Theater.
Mm-hmm. Playing Scott Aukerman.
Of course, yeah. He's hanging out with Master Chief and and Elmo and whoever the hell else is there. And they go, oh, Scott Aukerman? And look at all these other celebrities.
Do you think Elmo's down there? I gotta get there.
I don't know, man. I've never been to Manchuwalk's Chinese Theater. I have no idea what goes on in or outside of there. Or even if it's a theater. I don't know.
Yeah, we're on the outside looking in from Haiti for sure. But I think we gotta do a live broadcast in front of the Manchuwalk's Chinese Theater.
All right, so first live show outside of Noah's Ark. Second live show in the other place we discussed.
I think we have two or three or four now. I keep bringing them up and keep forgetting them.
Yeah, I mean, Noah's Ark is locked in. That one's a for sure. Obviously, there's other ones that we've talked about, but we'll throw Manchuwalk's Chinese Theater onto the list. And then, you know, eventually we'll do a show recording on somebody's handprints or whatever the hell goes on there.
That's why we need some kind of weirdo to create a wiki for us, because we're beautiful minding it. We have no time to write this stuff down.
Yeah, it's all up here. I'm pointing at my head for the listeners. It's all up here. Yeah.
Maybe Statue of Liberty, we should do a live show.
That doesn't feel organic.
No, it's not organic, but I love the Statue of Liberty.
Give us your poor, your hungry, your podcasters, whatever. We'll take them all.
Reminds me a lot of Dr. Michelle in her sentiment.
Oh, yeah, the way the Statue of Liberty just sobs and cries all the time.
Oh, and denigrates the pill industry.
Oh, of course. Yeah, absolutely. Isn't here to just push pills on people. Ugh.
I love that sentiment. I was so glad that made it into this film.
Oh, yeah. So, okay, well, let's get into the film then. Let's go, let's God. Time to talk about The Prey List 2020.
Yes.
For right off the bat, big shout-outs to our friends at Bridgestone Multimedia Group.
Yeah.
For another banger. This one, I mean, it isn't a coincidence that this one is also Bridgestone Media. We picked it, and then we found out it was Bridgestone Multimedia, and we're like, well, we have to do it then. We did Chloe's Mountain. Chuck The Prayer List onto that list now.
Thank you, Bridgestone Media Group, for supplying us with a plethora of Christian films that we can really delve into. Doesn't talk a lot about Christianity in this movie, though.
Well, there's some God stuff crammed in at the end, seemingly for no reason and apropos of nothing. Like, nobody mentions God ever. And then right at the end, they're like, oh, let's pray. Let's pray for this stuff. Oh, they've been Christian this whole time. Okay, well, that's weird. You tricked me.
And Mr. Yoke is the epitome of the perfect man, which is God. So that's more of an idol to him.
Now, when you say Mr. Yoke, do you mean the creepy molester who runs the Taekwondo Academy, or do you mean Mark Sherwood, entrepreneur, thrillionaire, creator of this movie?
I'm going to go with Mark, because he's Mr. Yoke. The karate instructor is more of a waif.
Please don't insult the Taekwondo community by hand-waving it away as karate. It's not karate. It's Korean.
Kicking and punching.
It's Korean martial arts. It's Taekwondo.
Yeah, it's all same. They're kicking. They're Asian. It's
one of them's Asian, and he's a sexual assaulter. So let's not paint all Taekwondoers with the same brush.
Oh, no. All Taekwondoers are usually pretty cool.
Hey, I had a pretty big crush on a girl in my elementary school who was into Taekwondo, so...
How big were her hands?
I don't know. She had diabetes.
Oh, so small hands.
Yeah, small hands, a lot of needle holes in her, yeah.
Good at karate, small hands. Is it a coincidence? I don't know.
Well, not good at karate, good at Taekwondo. How dare you? Please don't insult the Taekwondo community by comparing it to this childish garbage called karate.
I did not mean for that sentiment to be racist, but it really was.
You are just going to be just offhandedly calling Taekwondo the most respected, one of the largest sports in the world, with over 8 million practicing members today, and you're going to call that karate, like it's a friggin', like you get a gi out of your cereal box. How dare you?
Call me when it's at 8 billion.
Word up, man. Call me when it's it's also an Olympic sport. Maybe you've heard of something called little Taekwondo, the Olympic sport.
8 million is like 0.001% of the population. That's nothing. More people do eat Abba Zaba every year.
Hey, I don't know what eat Abba Zaba means, but I don't think
it's
a
taffy bar, baby.
Oh, we get that in Haiti? I didn't know that.
Yeah, we get it chipped in.
Oh, okay. That's pretty cool. So this movie opens with one of the finest acting performances I've ever had the pleasure of hearing in my ears. Did you think that this woman, Michelle, was going to burn her Taekwondo trophies? Because I certainly did.
Well, why wouldn't she? I'm assuming she does it after the scene ends.
Well, we know what she does after the scene ends. She makes the prayer list.
Well, later on, or do we get that initially?
No, I think, so the opening scene, Michelle, the main character, is crying, she's lit a fire in her backyard, she has a box of memories, presumably, she wants to burn and get rid of. And
lit a fire in her heart.
And lit a fire in her heart, of course, and lit her farts on fire, of course. And then, but then later on in the movie, we see the continuation of that scene where her best friend interrupts her and goes, let's make a prayer list, and then they do, so...
And that's the movie.
And that's the movie, kind of. That's kind of a 5-minute chunk of this movie for sure.
I really like the balls of them to open this movie with a fire. I think all movies should start with a fire. It really sets the tone of a serious movie.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the way she's wailing and crying. I have this note written down. Is this woman the main character? I don't want to watch her a whole movie. She's terrible.
And thankfully, you don't have to watch her the whole movie.
No. For some strange reason, they cast a younger person to play the younger version of her and her to play the older version of her. Even though, like, nobody else in the movie, like, everyone else in the movie plays young and old.
Yeah.
For some reason, they're like, we can't do that for her. We need to cast two different actors and then confuse everyone because only one person changes throughout the whole movie.
I think Michelle at 16 to 22 could have definitely played older Michelle too. Like, they definitely didn't need to make the switch.
No.
Although the older Michelle, Dr. Michelle, kind of looks more like the character they're trying to represent.
Yeah, well, I guess we should get this out of the way. I didn't put this together until the end of the movie, but, like, this is based on a real thing. This is based on a true story, the true story of Michelle Neal, who, with her husband, Mark Sherwood, run this holistic health clinic out of Tulsa. And like, I mean, I don't know. It looks like they kind of sell a bunch of, I bet Joe Rogan probably loves their clinic. It looks like they sell a bunch of supplements and crap out of there.
Oh, Joe Rogan loves these guys. He loves that they don't push prescriptions and push light.
That's right. Get yourself a healthy peptide, all right?
Get your gut health in order, you idiot.
Yeah, if you've completely torn your ACL, MCL, and PCL, just slap some duct tape on that knee and it'll heal right up. Don't even worry about it.
Yeah, get some good goo, put some seaweed in that goo, and then wrap it up in more seaweed, and you're good to go.
Amen to that, brother. I'm giving you a thumbs up on this side of the camera. Amen to that.
All I see is a pizza, baby.
Eat some seaweed, pal. That's what they're saying.
It's weird how many times they tell people to eat seaweed in this movie, and not in a doctor setting.
No, like in a Taekwondo dojo.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're yelling hi-ya, and sometimes they're yelling eat seaweed, and it's just, yeah, there's no rhyme or reason to it. I don't know why they're doing that.
Yeah. Or if you're throwing eggs at a parked car and somebody is sleeping in it, eat seaweed.
Oh, I can't wait to get to that part of the movie. But we gotta, so this movie is kind of confusing in the setup, in that it opens in the past, but not too far in the past. But then the crux of the movie is that it's a story told by Michelle's husband, Mark Sherwood, on their wedding day. And it's a story he tells to the wedding party. And so we see the story in flashbacks as he's telling it. Even though the movie opens in the past, it's just, it's a little muddled and confusing at first, but it all sorts itself out.
Yeah, it definitely starts sorting itself out when we get introduced to Mr. Yoke. And he's talking to the best friend and telling his best friend how much his wife got abused when she was younger on the wedding day.
Yeah, to which his friend goes like, I don't believe it. It's like, no.
Yeah.
She was being abused by all kinds of people. Yeah, whatever. I don't care.
This is why I think he's a day trader, because he's thinking about his stocks.
Of course.
His trades.
He's checking. His phone's buzzing. He's like, what's going on? What's going on? What are my meme stocks doing? What's happening with them?
Exactly.
So Michelle's best friend delivers a package to the husband-to-be, Mark Sherwood, and that's a real guy. I'm just going to refer, he's a real guy playing himself in this movie, which is just, yeah. It's so weird to see that. Anyway.
And I have him written down as Yoked, so I'm never going to call him Mark Sherwood.
That's
just
fair.
For the listeners, to create some more confusion.
And when Steve is saying yoked, he means this guy's forearms are the veiniest, thickest forearms. He could give Popeye a run for his money. That's how strong this guy is.
Yeah, he oozes sex.
Yeah, out of his dehydrated forearms that have veins popping out of them. Drink of water, Mark. What are you doing, man? That doesn't look comfortable or healthy.
Just red as heck all day because he's got so much blood pumping through his system.
Oh, yeah. Eating steak right off the cow. Just, you know, just living a real Joe Rogan lifestyle. Just venison and push-ups and ice baths. That's what this guy's doing all day long.
They should have had him eating steak and doing push-ups more during the storytelling.
He doesn't work out once on screen. And I was like, why would you?
Ridiculous.
Why? It's like casting an Adonis to play Samson and then not taking his shirt off for 45 minutes of the movie. Why did you even cast this guy then?
It makes a person mad.
It does make a person mad. Yeah, but I'll tell you what doesn't make a person mad. Making a beautiful love letter to your wife in the form of a poorly acted movie. I can't think of a nicer gift to give your wife than that. It is, like, once you know the full story of this movie, you go, that's kind of a sweet thing. Like, it's kind of a nice thing that happened here.
They're trying to notebook the heck out of this movie, using flashbacks and a love tale and letters to really tell an intimate story. But it's the execution of it is,
Well, I lay it all on the shoulders of Dr. Michelle. That's who I lay all the failings of this movie on. Like this movie would have been so much better if they just kept the young Michelle as all Michelle and not. But I guess it would have been weird at the very end when this like 22-year-old girl was marrying 75-year-old Mark Sherwood. Like that would have been a little strange.
A little strange, but I think I would have been on board. I think everybody in this movie is adopted.
It certainly sounds like it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what's her name's adopted? Michelle.
Yeah.
Mark Sherwood is adopted.
Best friend not adopted. I think. Well, you can't be adopted and be a day trader.
That's true, but no one's relationship status to their parents is clearly defined in this movie the way Mark's and Michelle's is. So
it's very unclear, and I'm just assuming they're all adopted.
Hey, man, here comes the bride. Here comes the bride. If only the bride knew the groom farts at night. That's a fun song. That's a fun thing to sing to the groom.
That's really fun. I wish I would have thought about it when I was the best man.
Well, when were you a best man? Not at my wedding.
I never was.
No, you were always a groom, never a groomsman.
Yes, I know. It's my biggest shame.
Well, if I have to renew my vows, if I have to renew my vows, I will cast you as my best man. I didn't have a best man at my wedding.
Well, no, but I feel like everybody should renew their vows at 60 years of age.
Oh, sure. Why not? Yeah. Even if you get married at 59, renew it at 60.
Have to.
Have to. Gun to your head.
Very much.
So we find out, like, I don't know. Michelle's mom got knocked up at 16 or whatever, and then her dad made her give it up for an adoption. And she's like...
Pretty funny.
Pretty funny scene. Like the grandpa is just like swerving, like the way he's driving that truck is like my favorite kind of fake driving in a movie, where the wheel just never stops going back and forth, and you go like, "What? Tighten up your truck, then, man. I think your wheels are loose or something if you're steering that much."
Which really shows his age, because like older movies, they actually did drive like that to indicate that they were moving and driving, and to the point where I thought that's how you drove for a long time as a small kid, until I finally drove, and my mom was like, "No, do not do that."
Right. Yeah, it'd be exhausting if you had to drive like that. It'd be like driving a Flintstones car, except instead of your feet moving, your hands would just be moving all the time. Horrible.
If your hands pumped the motor somehow, that would be a good way of driving, but it really doesn't work that way. I was proud of this scene. They obviously had some perfect green screen.
Mm-hmm.
They got a car and a flatbed truck. Mm-hmm. They did it big.
Watching this movie, in contrast, so yesterday morning, I watched the movie Dead Presidents. Have you ever seen that movie?
Yeah, it's kind of like this movie.
Yeah, it's exactly like this movie. Almost like note for note. It's kind of weird. But it was so weird watching Dead Presidents yesterday and seeing a movie, because that movie's from like the early 90s or late 80s or something like that. But it's so weird seeing a movie that like has a budget and has actors and has like is a competent movie, because we've been watching nothing but Christian movies. Like, most of my film diet is Christian movies right now that are super low budget and maybe not the best acting, certainly not the best directing, like all that stuff. But like Dead Presidents, they're filming like full-on Vietnam sequences and stuff, and I'm like, oh man, right, movies like have budgets and like do stuff in them. That's pretty cool.
Crane shots, big studio budgets, competent acting, much like the Apocalypse series.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right about that. Yeah. It was a nice like reminder of what movies usually are, and not like this where people are just swerving all over the road and, you know, whatever.
Yeah, you got a church budget.
Exactly. Yeah. Whatever people have donated that Sunday, that's what goes into that week of filming. So mother has a, you know, her mother squirts out Michelle, and then she's adopted by like two of the oldest people I've ever seen in movies.
They gotta be 80, right? Like, they're wrinkly to the bone.
Like, the woman who adopts her definitely is, like, in her 70s for sure. At least in her 70s. Yeah, she's got paper-thin skin. You can see her veins. Every vein in her arm you can see.
Yeah, she's probably older than Glammother.
Possibly, yeah. That would be haunting to think about that.
It is super haunting. I almost couldn't say it.
I love that the dad who adopts her, who is also like in his 60s, goes, "Oh, the heartache of being told we can't have another child just flew out the window when I laid eyes on this little angel." It's like, bro, That was like 30 years ago. What are you talking? Your window for having a child with your wife has been closed for a long time. What are you talking about?
Well, maybe they went to the doctor and the doctor was like, you're like 8 years after menopause. You cannot have a child. And that's what they're referring to.
8 years. Try like 35 years after menopause. Like this woman
well,
is
30
old.
Years ago when the doctor told them.
That makes sense. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I've just been living with the heartache of not being able to have another child. Why?
But it's also kind of a, like, he seems like a normal human being and like a sweet human being. And then every scene that he's in after this, he's made out to be trash.
Yeah, well, that's because he gets injured at work and now he's disabled.
Well, yeah, he is a disabled because he's too old to work.
Well, exactly. And it's weird that he says the pain, the heartache of being told we can't have another child.
Yeah.
We don't see any other children other than Michelle's younger sister, who is like considerably younger than her. So where are the other children that they had?
Yeah, the other child in this situation, in this family, should be older based on time.
Unless they adopted another kid at, like, when the mom was 80, and they were like, well, hey, bring another one into the family. Why not? We'll be dead tomorrow. That's fair to a child, to bring a child into this world and then die immediately. That's nice.
I think it's just a boner. Do you think that's Dr. Michelle's real mom and dad?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't think so. I gotta say no on that one. No, yeah. And
just churchgoers.
Of course, churchgoers, people who go to Mark Sherwood and Michelle's real clinic in Tulsa, Oklahoma. I mean, just their patients. They're probably all patients.
Maybe we could go to one of their seminars and do a live show from there.
That'd be pretty sick. Maybe we could get on their podcast and then do a crossover podcast with them.
Yeah, we'll definitely do a crossover, or maybe at least like a workout session where we're mic'd. I love the burn.
Well,
I'd be talking about how much I love it.
All right, well, fair enough. All right. So, oh yeah, dad gets injured at work. There's a scene where he's like, his foot is injured from the looks of it somehow. It looks like he just has a broken leg or something like that, but they keep being like, he just keeps getting more disabled every year. Go, does he keep getting injured at work? Like, calm down, man.
Well, I think it's secret gout.
You're probably right. Secret gout. He lives a very rich lifestyle.
Yeah, he's eating butter all the time, and it's just giving him gout.
Yeah, he's dipping beef in red wine and eating it like that. He goes, I want everything braised.
Yeah, and that steak is covered in butter.
Oh, of course. That's the only way to cook a steak, is pan-fried with butter.
It's more about buttering his wine than wining his steak.
Of course, but that's because he's keto. So he dumps a bunch of butter in his wine and goes, it's fine, this is keto, I can do this, it's okay. This is keto, it's healthy for me, it's healthy.
This is how you teach your body to consume fat.
Yeah, is there any bacon grease I can drink? This is healthy, this is good for me, it's keto, it's very good.
They really want to emphasize the health in this movie. At all costs.
And what a bunch of charlatans doctors are.
Real scum of the earth, really.
Oh,
really.
Bottom of the barrel garbage folk. Thank you for your service.
Thank you for going to school for 7 years and pushing pills on me.
Yeah, you junkies. You junkie makers.
I know the word doesn't apply, but you narcs.
In that you sell narcotics.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Family's got to move. They got to move to Tulsa. They live in Minnesota, and they got to move to Tulsa because...
Have to.
Like, all the moving in this movie doesn't make any sense. It's utterly absurd. The decisions people make regarding where their family and where they're going to be are all absurd. Like, and dumb.
The fact that this is based on a real thing is like the dumbest ever. The moving doesn't make any sense, but it must have happened in real life.
I guess, but it, like, I'm guessing it's like her remembering what happened in her childhood, like Michelle being like, yeah, we had to move so my mom could work at a different hospital in a different state, I guess. There was no other hospitals for her to work at in Minnesota, so we had to move to Oklahoma. Are those states even near each other? I don't know.
But then they had to move right back and I stayed?
Yeah, that's the thing. So they moved to Tulsa. Michelle gets really into Taekwondo there. And then the mom's like, we got to move back. Sorry, I lost my job. Oh, crap. This was your dream job. Oh, no. Well, sweep it under the rug. Who cares? But yeah, then they move back to Minnesota. But Michelle stays in Tulsa and lives in her car.
She's a amateur massage therapist. She does Taekwondo. Thank you for the correction on the actual name of the kicking.
The martial arts, yeah.
And yeah, martial arts. And then she lives in her car so she can send money back home to Minnesota because nobody has a job, I'm assuming, at this point.
I don't know. Like, I know her sister's young enough that her idea of a job is a paper route. So
yeah, get a paper route.
Get a paper route, mom. Get a job as a nurse, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, they, from the sounds of it, they move right back to where they moved from initially to go to Tulsa. Yeah.
It seems like it's a month or two that they're in Tulsa, and then she's shipped back to Minnesota to be a nurse there again.
Like, I don't understand why Michelle stays in Tulsa. Like, I get that it's like, oh, I have this creepy Taekwondo instructor who keeps telling me I'm going to be in the Olympics one day, even though Taekwondo is not an Olympic sport at this time and will not be an Olympic sport for like 15 years in the timeline of this movie.
They were really gunning for Olympics to take on the Taekwondo challenge.
Of course.
But they failed.
I was trying to find out who introduced Taekwondo to the Olympics, because in this movie, it is said that the guy who runs the dojo in Tulsa that she goes to is the guy who is like, he's spearheading this effort to get Taekwondo into the Olympics. But this guy in the movie, he's like a pedophile creep. So I just go like, if this movie's based on a real story, are they just slandering this guy's name? Or was this guy a pedophile creep in real life who brought Taekwondo to the Olympics?
I have to assume he was more of a pedophile than they even let on during this movie. Because they really grind him into the pedophile role. But like, he doesn't... I don't know. It's a hard road to go down.
Oh, yeah.
Because he is just a piece of crap abuser.
Yeah, I hated this the master of the dojo. Like, just a loser. Just a total and complete loser who runs a little tiny dojo. That apparently there's only 5 people that go to it, but yet somehow he's hyping everyone up about Taekwondo in the Olympics. Like, how did you get connected to the Olympics, man? Like, you're in Tulsa. I don't think you have any connections out there. Just bizarre.
Yeah, like, he's the subset of Joe Rogan listeners that are a little toxic. There's a very small percentage of them, but I feel like he definitely falls into that. Not because of Joe Rogan. He's just telling the truth. But he, like, this guy twists his words, you know?
Yeah, and the things that Joe talks about and the way Joe talks about them and just the kind of guests he has on his show really appeal to this pedophile creep. But that is not indicative of all listeners of the Truth podcast or anything like that. But certainly this guy found a home in the audience of the Joe Rogan Experience.
Yeah. You can really twist the world around you into your views if you're really set on being a destructive, abusive pedophile.
For sure, yeah. If your whole angle for hooking up with chicks is getting them to massage your tight shoulders and then touching their legs, then, bro, you've got a home in the audience of the Truth podcast. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, he's really bad at it.
Yeah, that's the other thing. He's just a bad molester, too. Like, he doesn't seem to have a plan when he's going into it. He's just kind of like, I'll just touch their legs and then say, like, hey, the place you used to work as a massage therapist, this is a rub and tug, so maybe you want to give a rub and tug? No, thanks.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Ah, rats.
She definitely works at a rub and tug, right?
It certainly sounds like she works at a rub and tug. Like, she keeps saying, like, oh, we got clients coming in really late tonight. And I'm like 6:30? Yeah. Is that what you're talking about? Because anything after 9 is rub and tug territory, buddy. Sorry.
Yeah, it's a wash.
Truly. But That's what she does. She's a Taekwondo champ who's just getting creeped on by her master by day and then working at a rub and tug at night. This is the hero of our story.
I wanted more montages of training. I wanted a little bit of Zim. I wanted some Zip. But it's really kind of depressing. Any tournaments or battles they show, it's all done in dark.
Yeah,
so they don't have to show the audience.
Yeah, it's just done in a pitch black room with spotlights on them, which honestly I think is a cool idea to like demonstrate that, because this is a story being told, so there's kind of a theatrical element to that. But I think they did it just because it was cheaper to do it like that, and like they didn't have a Taekwondo tournament they could go to, so they just
you throw in some stock audience noises and it's like you're already there.
You hire four people to shoot. Easy. It's easy to do, easy and done.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, do you mind if I start calling you Mugu Haseyao? Yayao?
I like it.
I don't know what it means. They keep calling Michelle that at this Taekwondo Academy, and I don't know what it means, but everyone's throwing it around like it's hermano or something like that.
I feel like it's, Korean for blue belt or something.
Probably, yeah, or like rookie or something. Like it's some kind of term of endearment for somebody. It's definitely Korean, I would imagine. That makes sense. It'd be weird if they were speaking German at a Korean Taekwondo dojo, but who knows?
Or Yiddish or something like that.
Oh, if only he called her Bubby and was like, "You're a real mensch, Michelle. Thanks for working out that tight spot on my back. You're a real mensch. Oh, I love it."
That's what this movie really needed, was a Jewish Taekwondo instructor. Then you would have kind of got into the storyline a little bit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just a lot of, oy vey, your kicks are so good.
I can't wait to the 8 days of Hanukkah.
There's nothing that brings me more pleasure than seeing my two best champions getting along. Hey, word to the wise, don't use the word pleasure in, like, regular conversation. Makes you seem like a creep, that's all.
It doesn't come good off the tongue. I think it worked in this moment.
Well...
Like, what else are you going to say? You got to say pleasure, but...
of course.
Don't ever say it out there in public service. Let's, let's kill pleasure.
Okay.
Pleasure's the new moist.
Right, hashtag kill pleasure.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Oh, right. Michelle's living in her car, and so that means she's sleeping in her car, which means that she puts like paper bags on all the windows.
Yeah.
She's in there, I guess. Which seems
it seems
more suspicious than just sleeping in your car.
Yeah, but you don't want creeps like looking at you while you're sleeping. You really want to be holed into like a cave. So that's probably why she put up the paper bags.
It's a good point. She's also a rookie at sleeping in cars. You don't park in the middle of the parking lot. You find the darkest corner of the parking lot and park there. You don't park like under a light in the park. That's crazy.
Yeah, she's kind of a dumb homeless person. She's just imitating other people that are living in their cars around her. She's not thinking about the variables and making her own best decisions.
No, I wish that there was a scene in this movie where we saw her go and buy that giant Magnum that she has in her car. I wish that we got scene where they're like, "What do you need this gun for?" And she's like, I sleep in my car. I need a giant gun that I definitely can't handle to shoot a guy who's trying to get into my car.
She probably just picked it up from Walmart.
Exactly. Well, I would have liked to have seen that too.
Definitely would have liked to see any purchase of this huge gun.
I would have loved to have seen her shoot that huge gun, just to see how she handled it, if she knew how to handle it. I have questions. I have my doubts that this 22-year-old child could handle the recoil of a giant gun. I doubt it, maybe.
I would have liked her to accidentally shoot one of the cops that comes and rescues her.
Yeah, not the one who was with her entire life, his partner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And these, like, dollar store badges that they're wearing around their neck are very not convincing.
No, no.
And,
they're like plainclothes policemen. I wouldn't trust those guys if they were just like, "Hey, everybody freeze." I'd go, "Nah, I don't think so, man."
Well, they're detectives.
Well, you're right. Yeah, they were on the trail of these three drunks. They'd been casing these three drunks for weeks.
These 13-year-old drunks with beards.
Oh, yeah. And, oh, better censor out those beer cans. I don't know. We didn't get the rights to that beer. Whoa.
Did we get the rights to this beer?
Did we get the rights to this poster in the back of the Taekwondo Academy? Nope. Why don't we just take it down? Nah, leave it in. We'll edit it out of every shot. No problem.
Did you catch it? Do you know what it says?
No, I think it's just some, like, Taekwondo poster. Like, I don't... It doesn't look... Like, there's just faces on it and then words that are blurred out, so I don't know. I have no idea what it's for, but presumably Taekwondo.
It's probably some Hulk Hogan bullcrap if it's the 80s.
You're probably right, actually. Yeah, it's a picture of someone tearing their shirt off, and I went, I don't know who that is. I don't recognize that behavior.
All that yellow, he looks like a mustard man.
Oh, is that mustard man? Oh, okay, yeah.
It's mustard man. He almost went with mustard man.
Yeah, of course. They were like, look, you got blonde hair, you got a blonde mustache, you wear a yellow shirt. Why don't we call you, I don't know, like mustard
ketchup. Man? Yeah, mustard man.
Ketchup. What about ketchup man? What about mustard man?
And then right before his first match, they changed it on him.
Yeah, they were like, hey, we're going to call you Hulk Hogan instead, I guess. He was like, oh, but I really loved Mustard Man. I was really excited to go out there and be the Mustard Man.
What about the Green Hulk? Won't that be confusing?
No. You're Yellow Hulk. You're Yellow Hulk Hogan.
But Mustard Man will live on in my heart.
I'll always be the Mustard Man. And when I call my daughter's boyfriend the N-word later on, I'll just say that it was Mustard Man saying that and not Hulk Hogan. Mustard Man took me over. I couldn't help it. When Mustard Man steering the ship, anything goes.
Mustard Man is crazy. That's why they had to change his name last minute, because he was wilding out. Mustard Man took over his life. He couldn't get rid of it.
Well, yeah, and we learned in the court deposition that Hulk Hogan has a 10-inch penis. Terry Bollea does not have a 10-inch. He's got a much smaller penis, and Mustard Man's penis is the size of a mustard seed. Which, yeah. Crazy that all that's on record somewhere.
It is on record. We all follow it. And Hulk Hogan, you can put in a locker and go home as your regular self for the rest of the day. With Mustard Man, you take that stuff home. It invades your real life.
Of course, yeah. You come home and, like, you know, the supper isn't quite ready when you get home. So you smash a vase. But that's Mustard Man doing that. That's not you, Terry Bollea, doing that. That's Mustard Man.
That is real name?
Mustard Man? Yeah.
Mustard Man?
Please, Hulk Hogan is a character I play on TV. My name is Mustard Man. How much would it cost to legally change our names to Mustard Man? Both of our names.
Yeah, I think we both need to create a movement in Haiti where we copy the Italians, and but we go with Mustard Man instead of, you know, pepperoni salami or whatever.
So when the moment you're born, you're dubbed Mustard Man, and then you got to pick your yellow-based name afterwards.
Oh, Mustard Man. Oh, Mustard Man.
Oh, gross. if these walls could talk, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, put it in me, Mustard Man.
Give me your seed, Mustard Man.
I want your seed, your tiny little mustard seed. Oh, Mustard Man.
Are you son of the mustard? Are you son of Mustard Man? Why, yes.
You know, the Mustard Man, the Please. Mustard Man, the Mustard Man.
Please, my father was Mr. Man. Call me Mustard Man.
It's got legs.
Your father
I feel like Mustard Man could be like a child's animated TV show.
I mean, I definitely think that a kid has drawn a picture of someone he's called Mustard Man before, like at a barbecue, and he was just like, I don't know, Ketchup Man, Mustard Man, Relish Man, Mustard Man. Maybe that's a persona that I could adopt, and then it's in you. It's like the Bye Bye Man. Don't say his name, don't speak his name, don't think his name. If Mustard Man exists, then he's haunting your life forever now. This was listeners, we tricked you. Mustard Man is a curse that was placed on us, and we needed to get Mustard Man off of us and onto somebody else, much like It Follows or the Bye Bye Man or something like that. So now, congratulations, you're all cursed with Mustard Man.
Yeah, we've been Mustard Man the whole time. We got you. We got you real good. I did also want to say, as the kid creating Mustard Man, him saying, "Hey, Dad, Mom, I'm Mustard Man."
Just a little kid, like a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
Just puts on this gruff voice. Hey, Ma, they call me Mustard Man from now on.
Yeah, he's on his way to, like, his cousin's birthday. He doesn't really want to go, so he creates this illusion for himself, and it's Mustard Man.
Yeah, he starts signing all of his everything Mustard Man, Mustard Man. All of his assignments at school have Mustard Man written on them.
It's a real problem. It's a curse.
It's a curse. And now, listeners, you've been cursed with this knowledge. Congratulations. Mustard Man now lives rent-free in your brain forever. And everywhere you go, you're going to be seeing a little speck of yellow out of the corner of your eye forever and ever. Like, right as you're drifting off to sleep, you know that moment right between awake and sleep where you're just kind of starting to slide? That's when you see the Mustard Man. And he's at the foot of your bed just watching you sleep, getting wet.
A little twinkle of yellow in the corner of your eye spills the Mustard Man.
You weren't even a mustard seed in your dad's nuts when I was doing this, when I met the Mustard Man.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, agreed, yeah, Mustard Man. I did like that Michelle calls her mom every once in a while, her mom, who's 110 years old at this point. She calls her mom picks up. They start chatting, catching up. And at the end of the conversation, there's this great line where... So her younger sister is named Joanne. And so as she's about to hang up the phone, Michelle goes, "Hey, Mom, tell Joanne hi-ya from me." And I thought that was pretty nice. Nice little moment.
Yeah, I'm surprised she didn't, like, laugh until she, like, died right there on the phone.
I was convinced we were going to get a shot of the wedding, like, of the actual wedding, and her mom and dad were going to be there.
I thought we were going to get a shot of the wedding and there was just going to be two caskets on either side of the bride and groom. It was going to be the mom and dad.
Yeah, a completely yellow man pushing two caskets down the center of the aisle. That's what I thought the wedding was going to be, essentially.
Yeah, well, you got to have the parents there, and they just died the night before, so circumstance. They both happened at a church.
Yep, they drowned in the baptismal font at a church, both of them. You know, the police aren't ruling out murder, but we'll see. The weird thing was that there was two yellow handprints on the back of their head, but those handprints had no fingerprints on them, so it was impossible to tell who those yellow handprints belonged to.
Yeah, well, the sheriff is also the priest in the small town that they live in. So they couldn't, you know, investigate the murder and have a wedding at the same time.
Why? Why at the end of Beckman, when Beckman confronts the Baldwin, who's doing mescaline in the desert or whatever...
Yeah.
When he gets him and he's like, got it, and there's a moment where he's like, oh, are you going to kill him or not? Why didn't he say a cool tough guy line like, "I forgive you," and then shoot him in the head? That's like a cool tough guy thing you could do that a priest cop would definitely say to somebody if you need a cool line.
Well, you're speaking to the choir because I just watched a movie called They Live.
Oh.
And it epitomizes the tough guy line. And we just need more of that in our movies. We need a little fun while we're killing people or aliens.
Yeah, absolutely. Is Keith David the other star of that movie? It's Roddy Piper. It's Mustard Man and Keith David, I think, right?
I think so. I don't know who Keith David is. I couldn't put it...
Well,
yeah.
Why don't you watch Dead Presidents? You'll see who Keith David is.
Oh, it is Keith David.
There you go. God, we should do They Live for this show. That's a religious movie.
Yeah, it's very religious.
You win a few titles, and then now you think you're better than master. I mean, I've won one title from the looks of it. I have one trophy, and you're a pedophile. So, yeah, I do think I'm better than you, master.
Yeah, almost every person on this planet is better than master.
Yeah, of course. You call yourself the Mustard Master. I'm not calling you that.
Yeah. Well, and also, he's the only person that could ever not be Mustard Man. He is not Mustard Man material whatsoever.
No, God, no. He's Master Mustard.
I like it.
That's the big reveal at the end of Mustard Man, is when they kill Mustard Man is defeated by the plucky teens or whatever, but then they realize, much like at the end of Mortal Kombat the movie, that there's a greater threat, and that's Master Mustard, who is up there watching down on them.
Yeah, the confusing thing about the movie Mustard Man is that Mustard Man is the hero, but also a separate person called Mustard Man is the villain.
Yeah, two Mustard Men. The Mustard Men, two of them, and then yeah. Mustard Master, or Master Mustard on top. Oh, boy. That's
all separate individuals.
Three different people. Mustard
Not
Man,
related.
The evil of Mustard Man lives within all hearts of all people.
Yeah.
Then also there's a separate person named Mustard Man, and also there's a separate person named Master Mustard. That's, that's the kitchen crew.
And when Mustard Man meets Mustard Man, it's very confusing. They kind of have a laugh about it, and then, like, they're pointing at each other. They didn't realize they were both Mustard Men.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It's a real I'm looking at you, looking at me situation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's mostly 10 minutes of you looking at me, looking at you, looking at me.
You talking to me? You talking to Mustard Man? Yeah. Oh, I don't see any of the Mustard Man here, but I'm a Mustard Man. Wait, you're a Mustard Man, but I'm a Mustard Man.
And it just starts over and over for a couple of minutes.
And then, like, a 6'10" guy walks in and goes, well, I'm Master Mustard. And they go, and then on and on and on.
Yeah, and then he blows up, and then mustard is sprayed everywhere.
Yeah, of course. So Mustard Michelle, like, finally spurs the advances of her creepy Taekwondo instructor, and as payback for that, he makes her just run a gauntlet and fight all the people in her Taekwondo dojo. Thankfully, it's a garbage dump of a dojo, so there's only four people she has to fight, which doesn't seem that hard, considering she whoops their asses, except for the last guy.
Well, yeah, they're all big teams, and they all do some kind of martial art in their off time. And they were the perfect casting for this film.
For sure, because of their martial arts prowess.
Yes. The last person she faces, I don't think does martial arts. I think he does boxing for a living.
I think it was...
Because he's too big.
Well, I think it was Hoist Gracie. Wasn't that who that guy was?
Oh, well, he's definitely a Hoist Gracie of a man.
Absolutely. Well, and you can tell that by the way he catches her leg when she kicks at him and then slams his elbow down on her knee, tearing her ACL, MCL, and PCL.
Well, you could probably bounce back from that.
Well, all you need is some duct tape and to, like, watch rehab through the window or whatever and pick up some tricks and tips from it.
Well, the thing is, if she had some seaweed, everything would be fine.
Well, exactly. Put a little bit of mustard on that, and you're laughing.
Seaweed and mustard? I don't know if you want that strong of a knee.
Well, if you want that strong of a flavor in your mouth.
Get it.
Absolutely. So, after that, after she gets her knee all bunged up, her dreams of Taekwondo are over, which, fine. Whatever. The lessons...
Yeah.
Taekwondo, it's more about training you how to be, like, responsible rather than how to, like, fight, because Taekwondo is worthless outside of a dojo. Like, when...
Oh, definitely.
When those three guys grab her and she beats them up with Taekwondo, I went, what are you talking? Like, why didn't one of those guys just punch her in the face? Like, they just let themselves get crane-kicked by this kid. It's, nobody would do that.
I watched an action film last night that had great choreography in their fight scenes. Like, it was just a treat to watch.
You're talking about They Live.
During this scene, I don't think any person had fought anybody before in their entire lives. And nobody had certainly filmed somebody fighting before ever, because it was pretty rough.
Yeah, the only... What I've learned about Taekwondo, much like what I've learned about dressage or any other sporting thing that I've learned from a movie, is that... In Taekwondo, you and your opponent stand, you wear your pads, you stand across from each other, and then you just wait for one of you to punch or kick the other one. You don't try to block it, you don't try to stop it. People telegraph what they're going to do from a mile away, and you just let them kick you full on in the chest, and you give them a point, I guess.
I guess. There's definitely no blocking. Your hands aren't tied to any mustard pole or anything like that, but... You definitely can't block anything.
Yeah, there's a bunch of children holding yellow ribbons strung from a pole, and they're kind of weaving in and out of each other, making this beautiful mustard pole, and then you grab that and you taekwondo fight people.
I feel like mustard pole is definitely the centerpiece of some kind of holiday that Mustard Man is a part of.
Of course.
But we'll get to that when we write the Mustard Man script.
Yeah, of course. And obviously mustard pole is what my stripper name is going to be, of course. It was going to be, Squirt Reynolds. But I think Mustard Pole is a much better name for a male stripper.
I just really wish we could strip in this town, you know what I mean?
Yeah, here in Haiti, of course. Yeah, I wish we could get our rocks off, you know?
Getting injured inspires Michelle to learn about the human body and to be really invested on how the body works. So she gets to be a really good massage therapist.
Yeah, except she doesn't put sheets on her table and then, like, just lets people's oily bodies lay on the, like, rubber of her table. It's disgusting.
Yeah, and she rubs the medial border of the scapula, like, nice. For 2 minutes, and then the massage is over.
And the client goes, oh, sploosh, you hit the right spot. Yeah. It's like, now.
Oh, let me pay for your school.
Yeah, so the woman that she's massaging is the wife of the cop that befriended Michelle when he saved her from getting attacked by those guys.
Yeah.
We kind of glossed over that, but it's inconsequential.
Who cares? Wife of the cop.
Yeah. So then the wife is like being all vague and being like, oh, when you figure out what you really want to do with your life, and you know, you got to figure out what you want to do. And Michelle's like, I'm doing it. I'm doing massage. Like, I'm helping people. I'm doing what I want to do. But
that's not what you do for the rest of your life. That's a dumb career. If you're, like, invested in helping people, you become a doctor, like a real Christian.
Yeah, you become a real healthcare professional, not someone who lives on the fringes of healthcare, like a massage therapist. Or, here's a little thing. Young Michelle calls it massage and says, I'm going to be a massage therapist. Well, she keeps saying I'm going to be a masseuse, but, like, I love massage, massage, massage. Old Michelle keeps calling it massage, and I go, you wouldn't mislearn how to say a word properly over the years. Like, that's like, oh, massage, oh yeah, I love doing massage. It's just a weird thing. And also, older Michelle has a way thicker accent, like a Minnesota accent, than young Michelle does. It's just, it's very, very the mustard seaweed gambit. Okay, what does that mean? That's what you wrote on screen.
I don't know. That's
me.
Why I wanted to type it and not bring it up on the podcast.
Well, don't send it to me. Every time you send me a message over Skype.
What was I supposed to do?
Well, write it down and then don't hit send.
Where?
In the chat.
My mustard book?
Yeah, in your big yellow mustard book.
Mustard really just works with everything.
A Reiki person told me that yellow is my power color.
Hey, Mustard Man in the flesh.
Okay, just call me Mustard.
Did you say that right back to her?
I did, yeah. I was like, call me Master Mustard.
Love it. I love that for you.
Oh, thank you. So this woman, Julie, the friend, offers to pay for the first semester of whatever kind of schooling Michelle wants to get. So Michelle, of course, picks the most expensive schooling imaginable. Goes, yeah. I want to be a doctor. Be a lawyer instead. That's slightly more expensive, I think.
Yeah, but she didn't even need it because she got a scholarship.
Yeah, which I didn't know you could get scholarships once you're already in school. I thought that was like a like before you get into university, you can get scholarship. I didn't know you could still apply for those once you're already in.
Oh, businesses love to create grants to make it seem like they're good people for donating $500 to one student.
That will buy you one textbook. Are we good now?
You have to do hours and hours of work to create a stupid essay for.
Yeah. For real, to get 500 big ones.
I love chocolate milk. Please give me chocolate milk money.
Yeah, please, Dairyland, please.
This letter wasn't sincere enough.
I don't
F
know.
You, Papa chocolate milk maker.
Yeah, for real. I love that before she decides to become a doctor, she calls her mom and is like, hey, so what made you decide to become a nurse? And her mom's like, gosh, I don't know. It's been so long. And she goes, well, give me one reason at least. And the mom goes, well, I heard that you can make good money doing that. And then Michelle goes, oh, so money's the only reason you got into it? It's like, well, no, you asked for one reason. I gave you the first one that came to mind. I don't remember why I became a nurse 35 years ago. I don't remember. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we're all addicted to money.
Yeah, we
it's
need
the first
it.
Thing that comes up.
For real. It's the only... Anytime you get a job, someone will go, oh, why do you want this job? For money. I don't... For no other reason than money, then I have to have a job and I need money. So just give me the thing and I'll do it.
The mom's a realist, and that's why she holds it down and moved back to Minnesota and didn't want to be in stupid Tulsa.
And looks right into the camera as she delivers her lines, and it made me very... I couldn't unlock my eyes from hers. Like, the mom's looking into the camera talking, and I was just staring into her eyes the whole time. I couldn't break eye contact.
I've started watching the background characters of these Christian movies a lot more, because especially when you're considering the prayer list type budget, mm-hmm. you see a lot of background people looking into the camera all the time.
Absolutely. Well, it's their right. Even old Michelle looks into the camera several times in this movie. It's great.
Well, they tell you not to look in the camera, and that's just what you want to do. You want to hold that camera up to your face and look right in it.
Go, is this 10 pounds or is it more?
Is this me? Is that you? Is it me looking at you?
When I look at this footage back, am I going to see me or am I going to see Mustard Man? Who am I going to see reflected on screen?
There should definitely be a Mustard Man filter for all TVs out there.
Of course,
so it turns every character into a Mustard Man.
Well, much like They Live, you have to wear a special pair of glasses, and then you can see the true Mustard Man that exists within all of us.
Maybe that's what we should sell on OnlyFans, is sunglasses that turn everybody into Mustard Man.
Oh, I thought you were just going to say sunglasses. Maybe that's what we should get into.
Should we just
sunglasses business.
Start a sunglasses movie.
It's a great idea.
Business.
Get sponsored by the Sunglasses Hut.
Yeah.
We could do
But let's become the Sunglasses Hut. Let's just take what they did and do that.
Mm-hmm. Why can't we do that? Why can't we call it, I don't know, the Sunglasses Place?
Yeah. Well, all you need is probably like $200 to buy a bunch of crappy sunglasses from China.
Yeah.
And then you got yourself a business.
And then suddenly you're in the sunglass shack. That's you.
Well, then you're suddenly Susan.
Oh, well, of course.
Reference.
Hey, don't you think this story is getting a little hard to believe? Jim, my best man, you know my wife. What are you talking... You know that this story isn't fake. You've heard it. You know the person who lived it.
The fact that he doesn't get him in a headlock and tell him to shut up and listen to the story is beyond me.
And squeeze with those big arms until Jim's head pops like a grape. Years go by. Presumably at least 7 years go by. Maybe more. Maybe 10 years go by. Because now Michelle is a doctor. And just doctoring it up. She's at her first day at a clinic, at her first job as a doctor. It's old Michelle, so her got a real thick Minnesota accent, and stick to selling houses. How's that sound?
Stop sounding Canadian and speak like an Oklahomian.
Right? Yeah. Well, she doesn't, though. But what she does do is complain about the workload on the first day of her job.
Yeah. Oh, my God. What an idiot. Always grind. Be grinding, especially on your first day.
Exactly.
Never say a word about too much work.
ABG. Always be grinding. Whether in the club or in your life.
She's got a cool couple of coworkers. The the other female doctor and then the owner. And I'm presuming that's it.
Yeah, presumably. Yeah, three doctors who work here. One of them is just a lying, just an untrustworthy bee. And then the other one is an old man who is like, it's good enough for my day. Why isn't it good enough for 70 years later? I don't know.
I push the pills and I get them to take the pills and then I go home and F my wife.
And then watch my wife get F'd.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
All doctors are cucks. You can't get away from it.
Male or female. But I love that she's like, oh my God, 10 patients today. Oh, that sounds like a lot. It's like, you're a doctor. You're going to be in that room for 45 seconds. Like, what do you mean? It's like, and at this clinic especially, where they're like, just get people through the door as fast as you can and get them out and get their money and get them out of here. It's like, you're going to be done 10 patients before lunch. What are you like worried about?
Yeah, you could probably, if you're seeing them for 2 to 3 minutes and writing a prescription, That should be like 40 people in a day.
Yeah, the fact that their goal is 20 people is like, well, that doesn't even sound like a lot. Like when I go when I go to my doctor's, he'll call in five people at a time, put us in five separate rooms, and then bing, 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 and just hit us all in half an hour. It's nothing.
Yeah, but then you got to take a cig break and probably have like a couple of shots of Yag.
Of course, eat a handful of mustard to like replenish yourself, of course.
Well, mustard is a digestive.
Exactly. And here's the thing. If your patients come in with symptoms, you treat the symptoms. Wrong, doctor. You try to treat the cause. You don't. Treating the symptoms does nothing to fix the problem. It just makes them feel better. That's not fixing anything.
Yeah, you got to go to the roots. The roots. The roots are where the problem is.
Yeah, exactly.
That old song, right?
It's a classic. Can't wait to turn that into our new theme song.
It'll show up sometime.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, I'll make something out of it. I don't know what it is yet, but I'll make something.
All right.
There's got to be a happy medium between these two doctoring styles, because the people she works for are like, get them in and out. Don't even let, just treat them, get them out the door. Get their money, get out. But Michelle is like, I'm going to get to know my clients. In fact, I'm going to go to their house and I'm going to hang out with them and learn and spend hours of my own time just learning about these people. And I go, well, that's not sustainable. Like, you can't do that for very long, can you?
Well, apparently she can, and she did, and she stopped people from eating fried chicken, which, thank goodness.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, ruined their dinner, being like, like, he made you supper, and you went, hey, you know what? Throw this in the garbage, and let's go get you some, like, kale. Let's get you some seaweed.
Yeah, I know I'm just staring at you eating this meal that you prepared for us and not eating it at all, but how about we throw it in the trash and get real food?
Yeah, hey, can I look it through your cupboards? I know you just set supper out, and I watched you prepare it for an hour and a half, but can I look through your cupboards real quick?
Yeah, let's look at cupboards.
Yeah, sorry, there's a cat on the table next to me, and Steve really wanted me to pet it, so I did.
Well, you see a cat, you want to wave at cats.
Of course.
They're precious little animals.
Hey, little fish, what's up?
Oh, look at that.
What a sweetheart. Hey, Amber. You're just the sweetest kitten. Hey. You got anything else you want to say to the listeners? No.
Life comes in all shapes and sizes.
She's our little mustard man. I'll tell you that much. Well, what else happens in this movie?
I don't know, a bunch of dead air, and I think the credits roll.
Yeah, I do like that she talks to one patient, and she's like, so what's going on with you? And he goes, I'm tired all the time. I have a dickens of a time getting to sleep, and I have pain all over my body. And I could just think, oh, you're dying. That's what's going on with you.
You need an implant for sure. Probably a new hip.
Yeah, some new tits.
Yeah, she really wants the implant.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. But that's not what this clinic does. They're just in and out. Get in and out. What are your symptoms? Yeah. You don't have big enough tits? We got you covered.
And then she does. She gets 20 a day, the required amount, and she's helping people a lot.
Yeah, but she's spending like days of her own personal time going to people's houses and watching them eat supper or whatever.
What else is she going to do? Like, go home and crush Gossip Girl all night?
That's true, yeah. Maybe go over to the other lady doctor's house and crack a bottle of wine at 9:45 in the morning? Why not?
Oh, that's when you have to do it, though. I mean, that's what daytime television tells us when we can drink wine. It has to be white wine, though. These ladies doing red wine that early in the morning is ridiculous.
Oh, you're going to have a headache by noon if you're doing that.
Yeah. Well, if you're not chugging water at the same time, that's for sure.
I love that they're just, like, pounding wine, and then the one doctor goes, oh, I got a call from the hospital. I got to get down to the hospital. It's like, you're wine drunk right now. You should not be going to the hospital in this state, I'll tell you that much.
You can have a water too, wink wink.
That's true. You know, my massage therapist just tells me, I'm just, where do you want deep tissue or sweetest massage? It's just
sweetest.
Like, cut, do another
have
take.
Have another take. Yeah.
The light was fading. We couldn't, sorry, it was perfect light.
The the sun position wasn't... I think they use one living room and change it up a little bit for a bunch of different scenes in this movie.
I think you're right. There's an ADT security company sticker on a window of a door that shows up in like that door is in a bunch of different scenes in a bunch of different places. So I think you're right. I think they do just like turn someone's kitchen into a living room when they need it, or turn it into this or that. Yeah. Good filmmaking. Smart.
And I'm about to break down and cry because you always got my back. Thank you, Lord.
Of course, man. Of course. Thank you, Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Lord, for giving us royals. We love it.
Yeah. Thank you for giving us the royals.
That, I mean, when we say Lord on the show, we're talking about New Zealand musical artist Lord. We're not talking about God who doesn't exist. We're talking about Lord who does exist.
God, our Heavenly Father, doesn't exist?
No, it's Lord. It's Lord. That's who it is. It's always been Lord.
Lord's our Faja and our Maja?
Yeah, Lord is Master Mustard.
She's from New Zealand?
I think so, something like that. Or
that tiny little island produces so much.
Name one other thing it produced besides Lord of the Rings.
Flight of the Conchords.
Ah, you got me. You got me. I gotta whip myself now, I'm sorry.
You just wanted to whip yourself.
Yeah, I just needed any excuse. Any port in a storm, you know?
Yeah.
So Michelle basically signs her death certificate by telling this other completely untrustworthy doctor that she's going to patients'
homes. That hates her. That clearly hates her.
Hates her, is like talking trash behind her back, but like 2 feet from her, so she can definitely hear her talking trash. Like, but just tells her, yeah, I go to my patient's house on my own time and just worm my way into their life to find out why their foot is sore or whatever. And
well, it's a mountain that she has to climb. All these people that have happened in her life are her Chloe's mountains.
Oh, Michelle's mountain. That's what I'm talking about. You kept texting me about Michelle's mountains, and I was like, I don't feel about this realtor the way you do.
Well, I'm very horny.
True.
But these movies should all be called whatever the name of the character is, and then mountains.
Oh, great idea. Okay, well, maybe that'll be a new segment. What is whom's was the Bagger Vance of this movie, and then what was the mountain that they had to climb?
I feel like our show is going to devolve into a bunch of these, like, who did you think this character was, or who did you think this was in that movie?
Maybe.
But I'm here for it. Okay. I could do, like, 20 of those.
I agree. So the other doctor immediately rats her out. Michelle gets fired. She's at home, like, freaking out. This is when she lights the fire, which, like, in hindsight, doesn't, like, looking at the footage at the start of the movie and then where it connects to the movie... Why is she like she got fired from her first job as a doctor, and her immediate response is, I'm going to burn my certificate and burn all my Taekwondo trophies and just burn every piece of my past. It's like, you're going to get fired from a lot of jobs. Also, you're a doctor. You'll be fine. Don't worry about it. There's always need for doctors.
Yeah, you're going to be fine. You're paid. You got probably a 401k that is just top to the nines.
Oh, yeah.
But sometimes you just want to burn your life down, even though you're a headstrong doctor. Yeah.
Sometimes you want to say stuff like, if I can't practice at his clinic, then I'm not fit to practice anywhere. All right, well, stop thinking that the first person you meet is Master Mustard when it comes to whatever you are, like, meeting them for. Your creepy Taekwondo instructor is just some loser in Tulsa who runs a crappy Taekwondo studio. This old geezer who runs, like, a crappy doctor's office is not king of the doctors. She just... No. Maybe that's the lesson she needed to learn, is like, hey, don't think that everyone is a master just because they're slightly ahead of you.
Yeah, stop putting people in authority on pedestals. They're just human beings, and they're crappy just like anybody else is.
Yeah, exactly. And careful with that bag of avocados. You drop them, they roll out the front door. What are you doing, Michelle?
Yeah, she doesn't know how to handle her avocados.
No, or her mangoes, or her peppers, seaweed. Or her seaweed, yep.
But that's the life of a doctor.
Well, of course. So, then her friend writes out a list of things that, like, Michelle would want in a clinic, and then goes, well, you should just start your own clinic instead. And Michelle goes, okay. And then later on, her friend writes out a list of qualities that Michelle's looking for in a lover, and then she meets Mark Sherman, or Sherwood, and he's all those things.
Yeah, he is all those things and a bag of carrots.
Oh, yeah, and a jug of protein powder.
Yeah, a jug of hummus.
Yeah, yum. Protein.
I'm getting my protein in, jug of hummus.
But, like, the way that I glossed over those two lists really quickly is how the movie does it, too.
Yeah.
And it's called the prayer list, but those prayer lists are just like, write a list and then pray for it. Anyway, next scene, who cares, whatever.
Yeah. Well, you created a list. Oh, you should make that list happen, build your own business. Bada bing, bada boom, that does happen. And then she has everything she's ever wanted, but she wants a man, a Christian man,
of course,
baby.
Because,
so you write a list.
But that's smart. No woman's life is satisfied and fulfilled until a man is in it. That's the lesson of this movie.
Yeah. No matter how many Olympics that you never make it into, no matter how many doctors you prescribe, no matter how good your life is, you need a man.
Yeah, of course. No matter how yellow your mustard is, you need a man. And she gets one. So we get this.
That should be on a jar of mustard, by the way.
No matter how yellow your mustard is, you need a man.
We should come out with mustard.
That's a great idea. Yeah. I mean, we live in the mustard capital of Haiti.
We got the seeds.
I think it's called the mustard belt where we live.
It probably is. There's a lot of mustard.
We do have a lot
parts.
Of mustard around here, yeah. I did not enjoy their first date. Their first date gave me douche chills all over. Like, if this was my first... There were moments on either side of the table where I would go, oh, I would have left this date. Like, when he first gets there and he walks up to her and he goes, when I walked in and saw you, I thought I was in the presence of royalty. Would you mind if I addressed you as my queen? It's like, oh my god, incel. Like, tip your friggin' fedora a little harder, you creep.
And if you're Travis Scott or Brad Pitt or one another of those, like, sexy, you know, Adonis, then you can say something like that. You're smooth enough. But when you're, like, a 400-pound behemoth muscle man and awkwardly saying this, I'm probably leaving the room unless you got a cushy spine as well.
I hate that idea of, like, oh, you're my queen. It's like, you don't even know this person. Like, you're saying that because you think she's pretty. Like, that's the shallowest, crappiest reason to worship someone like that. You know what? What if she's horrible? And you're just like, oh, my queen, my liege. Oh, I love you. Give her a chance to ruin it first.
In his defense, he probably has been to, like, 100 of her seminars.
He's been to one.
Well, he said he's been to them all.
Did he? I didn't hear that.
I don't
know. I do remember he said that he was at her at like 1-3 months ago or something like that, and she remembered where he was in the crowd and the hair color of the woman who was with him, which is weird.
And it's creepy because she's like, she says specifically like row 3, like 2 to the back or something like that, which is very creepy and specific. But she was probably just staring at his hulking muscles the whole time.
Well, he was flexing his pecs the entire praise. She was having a hard time concentrating, so his I mean, I'm having a hard time speaking, so his pecs were bouncing so much.
She counted the rows, she counted the seats in, and then she just, like, fixated on this muscle man so she could get him someday.
Hey, you and me both, sister. Oh, the other thing, so I said that if I was on her side of the table and he was like, can I call you my queen? I'd go, no, goodbye. This is insane. But on his side of the table, when her friend just shows up out of nowhere and is like, I'm joining your date now. If you're really a good man for my friend, then you won't mind that I'm here. I'd be like, oh, okay, goodbye. Like, I'm not playing these games with you guys. That's for sure. Like, you're going to just like, you're going to agree to go on a date with me. We're going to get there. Everything's going to be great. You're not going to tell me that your friend is joining us on this date. It's fine if you want a friend here. That's okay. But don't just have them show up and go, I'm a part of this date now. And go, no, I don't, you're not, this isn't worth this hassle. No, thanks.
It's absolutely disgusting. I couldn't stand for it. Also, nobody says I love you. There's not a big plate of pasta already there with one giant meatball.
No.
They're just doing the first date wrong.
Yeah, all wrong. Coming in way too hot, not even romancing someone by standing up, taking your genitals out, and telling them you love them. Not even, like, what happened to, like, romance? You know, what happened to, like, men throwing their jackets into puddles for women to step on and taking their genitals out and telling you I love you at a dinner? Like, what's, you know, it's like chivalry is dead. It doesn't even exist anymore, it feels like.
whatever happened to pepperoni salami restaurants with candles and sweet music and love and taking your genitals out and saying I love you on the first date as maybe your first words?
Yeah, dipping them in that spaghetti with one big meatball.
You pre-order the spaghetti, so it's there, so you can say I love you, so you can get into the relationship.
That's a really smart call. That's a great call. If you're ever going on a first date with somebody to a restaurant, order ahead. Go, hey, we just need a big plate of spaghetti. Like
weeks ahead.
Oh, yeah. Like, before you even have the date. Make sure to, like, what you should do is call restaurants, set up dates for further in the future, and then that gives you motivation to find someone to fill those dates. Otherwise, you're going to embarrass yourself in front of the good people at this restaurant. In front of the good people at Eastside Mario's. You don't want to do that.
Hey, bada boom, bada bang.
Hey, bada boom, bada ching. Steve, what did you think of The Prayer List?
I thought this movie kind of blew.
All right,
I'm glad it spurred Mustard Man. That's going to live in my heart forever.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked how muscular the man was. Mark Sherwood. The fact that this is a true story really makes me want to dive into the story, the timeline of the moving from Minnesota to Tulsa and back. That's what I really want to find out. But other than that, I give it 2 stars. What did you think of The Prayer List?
I loved it. It was the kind of movie I love, which is a well-acted, well-written, well-directed piece of cinema. And if you're looking for just... if you're looking for something to tickle that inner Mustard Man on you, look no further than 2020's The Prayer List.
If you've seen The Karate Kid a billion times but still want to get some Taekwondo in you, watch The Prayer List.
I love you.
I love you.
We love you.
The P, the U, the R, the E, the B, the O, the Y, the S, it's Pure Boys.
You can also it's stop after boys. You yeah, got two
the
of
U. The P, the U, the R, the E, the B, the O, the Y, the S, it's Pure Boys.
The U.
Hold up, it's Pure Boys.
Say what?